You're tuned in to the Health After 30 podcast, and today's episode is for anyone who has done genetic testing or is interested in doing genetic testing for medical purposes to see what you've been predisposed to and who you can talk to help you better understand what's going on and what you can do moving forward. Hey, I'm Alana Bonneman, naturopath and holistic nutritionist. This podcast is dedicated to reclaiming your health by harnessing yourself as your biggest asset. Get ready, because this is where we stand up for your body's ability to heal, go against outdated norms, and say yes to change. Creating true and lasting success, all from the inside out. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Health After 30 podcast, and let's get started. Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Health After 30 podcast. It's Alana with you, and thank you so much for tuning in. You could have been anywhere, but you're here, interested in yourself and in your health. And today I have a great episode. If you've ever done genetic testing or you're interested, then it's definitely something that you need to be listening to. I'm sitting down with Alekhya Naravula. She's a board-certified genetic counselor with 15 years of experience in clinical, laboratorial, and industry roles spanning over the globe. She's a board member of the European Board of Medical Genetic Counselor branch, and her goal is to improve overall genome literacy, because as she says, things are changing. Things are becoming more up to date. We have tests for things that we didn't have tests for before. And then with that information, how we can go about it. So while she doesn't do the testing herself, she works as a counselor to first give the information, going through a health history to find out what type of testing you might actually need specific to you, and then how to go about the information that you do get back. How can you then adapt life to understand the results of the test? So she really works closely with people and walks them through the process and how to understand it. Her hope is to make genetic care accessible to everyone, which I think is such a wonderful goal. If we know what we are predisposed to, and we know that we can take preventative measures in some cases to prevent certain diseases and illnesses, isn't this something that everyone should have access to and everyone should know? It's such a powerful conversation, and she turns over a lot of stones and answers a lot of questions that I was very curious about because I didn't know much about the topic. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. If you enjoy today's episode or any other episode, please leave a rating or a review. If you're at the point, whether you've done genetic testing or not, and you're thinking, I am ready to get on top of my health, then you are definitely in the right place. Head over to alanabonneman.com if you also want to get resources and get started on your health journey today. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Alana Bonneman, and let's get into today's episode. Hi, Alekhya, and welcome to the Health After 30 podcast. I'm excited about today's conversation, as you are the first person I've talked to who is a genetic counselor. So you're actually the first person who's even brought this topic to my awareness. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Alana, for inviting me to be on your show, and very glad to be able to talk to people about genetics. And just like you, I think a lot of people are unaware how far we've come and how we can use genetics today to actually change our health for the better. And I would love to tell your listeners more about that.
Yeah, so let's get into it. So genetic counseling, what does that mean? What is that? What defines this?
Yeah, so usually genetic counselors are healthcare professionals. They are not doctors, but think of it as something similar to a nurse practitioner training. It's a clinical master's studies, and we are experts in genetic disease and genetic testing, but also trying how to explain those topics to people, just because genetic testing is not your average blood test. It involves a lot of very difficult decisions, especially before, when the profession originally started, there was no therapy, there was no gene therapy, then no treatment. We didn't even know how to identify the exact genetic disease running in families. So that's where genetic counselors came in and really tried to support these families to understand if this is something that's running in families, Is there something that they can do? What are the risks for other people? Will their children get it? Will they themselves get it if their parents had it? And also sometimes people would have to make difficult decisions about family planning or how to adjust their lives because they might be at risk for developing neurodegenerative disease later in life. So things like that. And that's where I think the counseling aspect started. Like, there was a lot of psychosocial decision-making involved. And then, of course, the genetics piece is really doing these family risk assessments, understanding your family medical history, and seeing what the patterns are and which disease this could be, what is the right test for you, because we've come very far with testing now. And I feel like it's also evolved over time. So before, it used to be a lot more psychosocial, helping the family through difficult times with this diagnosis and the entire family. But now it's also a bit more educational and informational because there's so much out there and everyone is peddling a genetic test. Then we'll talk about some of those, right? Because it's not just you, it's your entire family. So, and also insurance and things like that and privacy. So there's a lot of these concerns and things and what the benefits are and the risks are. So helping patients through that and not just patients anymore, but also preventively nowadays, because we understand more about genetics, and then helping them with that test. And since the results are complicated, guiding them with the results, what it means for them, what to do with this result. Can this clinically translate into me not getting the disease or reducing my symptoms? Is there a treatment available? So yeah, so informing treatment and management. So we kind of support that entire ecosystem of genetic diseases, genetic testing, and helping patients and individuals and healthy people today.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack here because there's so many different factors that kind of come into this. But I just want to start by saying, so genetic testing has always been around, right? We get, you know, you can get genetic testing, but I guess where you come in as a counselor is it's once you've got these tests or once you've got the information, the patient then sits there and thinks, great, I've got all of this information. Now, what does that mean? What do I do with this information? So you're in essence walking them, their families, or whoever's involved through the processes, the pros, the cons, and what they can do about it.
Important thing is that coming in even before people have the test, because a lot of times people are not getting the most appropriate test for them. And genetic counselors can also help the pre, so we call it the pre-test counseling, although a lot of that now is moving more into other mainstream physicians because there's just so many people getting testing. But that's also our expertise because there's so many tests out there. So really helping the patient.
Can you give us an example of what an appropriate test would be if someone is going, because they would obviously talk to their doctor about it, or do they just test without? Like, can you walk us through that? What's an appropriate test that someone would need then?
Usually what happens is the average physician is not well-versed in genetics. So they themselves do not really know which test to order. So a lot of times when they see someone at risk because of family history or the symptoms look like this could be genetic, they refer people on to a genetics clinic or a genetic counselor. So there's physician geneticists who usually also see patients and genetic counselors, and they can work together as a team when trying to identify what this patient has or what this individual has. So one is diagnostic. So you are seeing something, they're referred into genetics, and then if a physical consult is needed, the geneticist physician comes in, diagnoses, looks at that, but then the entire understanding the family history, explaining that to the patient is all done by a genetic counselor. But now more and more genetic counselors practice on their own or with other professionals. So like say neurologists, cardiologists, nephrologists, OB gynecologists. So really in every specialty now genetic counselors practice because there's genetic conditions that hit every single one of those specialties. Or say it's preventive before you get pregnant, or you're adopted, you don't know your family history, or you're just a healthy individual who's curious as to whether this can actually help you prevent getting cancer or getting any heart diseases. So in all of the situations, either their patients can be referred on to a genetic counselor just to discuss their risks and their family history, because the average genetic counseling consult is about 45 minutes to 60 minutes. your physician is not going to sit with you to do that. The most you get is, are there any diseases in your family that come that have been in multiple generations? No? Okay, move on. So that's the family history question you get from the average physician. But we actually take a three-generation family medical history as a genetic counselor to really understand whether there could be an increased risk for genetics. Same thing with, say, if someone has had recurrent pregnancy losses. So a lot of testing preemptively happens in the reproductive space. We have been doing genetic testing, but not with DNA for a very long time. For example, in pregnancy, most women have had a screening for Down syndrome. And Down syndrome is a genetic condition. It's a very specific type of genetic condition. But even though a DNA test was not done before, a hormonal, a biochemical test was done as to what metabolites are being released by the placenta, right? So that's what's measured, but ultimately it is looking for a genetic disease. It was a screen with a high risk on that screening test. We're then recommended to get a confirmatory genetic test by doing the invasive amnio procedure to take the cells of the baby.
I think of genetic testing, I feel like it can be a very two-edged sword, because on one side, knowing our family history and knowing perhaps what we're predisposed to, very insightful, very, like, it's great for us to know, we can prepare. On the other side, knowing what we might inherit can also be quite daunting. So when you're walking someone through this, what is the perhaps statistics, or what's the general feel that people are getting with this information of, okay, this is what I'm inheriting or I'm predisposed to?
Yeah, there's different aspects to it, right? So one is, are the people who already know there's something in their family, and they are seeking it out because they have seen that, and then they are worried that they might be at risk and they really want to know. Mm-hmm. And there are people who think they want to know, and then after having a discussion, especially for neurodegenerative diseases, they decide that they don't want to know, especially for those where there's no treatment, no therapy. So they might come in thinking they want to know, they'll think about it, and after having a conversation decide that no, and then just leave. Or some of them even get the test and then never come back for the results because they change their mind, or they come back 10 years later. So I think it really depends on the individual's personality, because I talk to a lot of people in, you know, the younger generation who are these biohackers and very health conscious, and they're like, why would you not want to know? Have you had your genome sequenced? So I have never had my genome sequenced because there is no indication to, because we are still at a point where if you're completely healthy, it's still not going to tell us a lot unless there is an indication. So as I mentioned, for healthy people, there are some indications where it makes sense. So you and your partner are looking to have a child, or maybe there are certain cancer conditions, some heart conditions. It makes sense because we think the incidence is higher. So maybe your family tree is quite small. Maybe a lot of people died early, so you don't have enough information. So it might still benefit you to do that, because for those conditions, we actually have guidelines of what to do and how to manage. But just doing a genome on a healthy person at this point in time, it's great to have, but ultimately you're still only going to look for that 100 genes or 50 genes where we know how to manage it medically. The rest is just not relevant, because what are we looking for? So we're not there yet. Maybe we will get there with all the big data and everything that's coming out slowly with all these biobanks and the UK Genome Project and all of these, but not there yet. We thought we would. Once we sequenced it, we will know everything, but what we realized is we know very little. With AI, there's been so many advances coming out very quickly. So maybe in the next 5 to 10 years, I think we will see an explosion of this, especially genomics combined with metabolics and proteomics, where you're looking at the DNA, but you're also looking at how that DNA is being expressed, and then combining all of that to see, yeah, what is going on, rather than just, this is your DNA, you have this change, this mutation, this disease-causing change, but we don't know how severe it's going to be, or at what age exactly you're going to get it, or two siblings, which one is going to be more severely affected than the other. So right now, a lot of times we can't even predict that. So in the same family, different people can be affected differently with the same disease.
Genetics is one thing, but epigenetics is also on the other side of that, correct? So even if you have the genes, and I think, you know, this also comes into the people of not wanting to know, or the biohackers wanting to know, because once you get this information, I guess moving forward with the information that you have, I guess it's what can you now do? And if there are diseases which are perhaps not treatable or they don't have the treatment yet, what can we be doing in our lives too then? When I hear you talk about this, I think, what can we be doing in our lives to kind of straighten up what we're doing? How can we perhaps start to live the life which is going to perhaps prevent the predisposed genetic, you know, inheritance that happening sooner?
One of the basics that maybe we can talk about that is there's diseases which are very high risk caused by a specific gene. So we all have the same 20,000 genes, 22,000 genes, out of which we right now know that 5,000 cause very specific disease. So this gene is responsible for producing this protein. If this gene has a mutation that makes it not work, we don't have this functioning protein, which causes all the symptoms because it's not doing its job in the body, right? And that all those symptoms put together is a genetic condition. And there are ones where, you know, you're born with that mutation, you will get the disease. Either at birth, you already have it, it's congenital, or over time, you develop the symptoms and you have the disease at birth. So, and these are very high risks. And then there are ones where predispositions, right? So you have it, like say for the breast cancer, the BRCA gene, you have a mutation, but it's an adult onset condition. It takes some time to develop it. And there are definitely other modifying risk factors that say, so it's still not 100% risk. It's not that you're born with breast cancer. So it's what are you doing to mitigate it? Are there other genes that are actually minimizing your risk, increasing your risk? So some of them are still a predisposition with, you know, 80% chance by the time you're 80, but it's still not 100%. So that's where there is the definite causative 1:1, you have it. Then there's the ones where you have it, you're super high risk, but it's still not 100% chance. And then you have all the genetic ones, which are most of them where it's an interplay of multiple genes, the environment, and your lifestyle. And what I like to say for this is an analogy that comes from mental health, where they're like, when people ask, is it inherited? Am I going to have a mental health disease? A nice analogy is it's called like a glass model, where you're born with a certain number of genetic factors. Either some people have a lot of them, some people have less, but then how much of the environmental and the lifestyle factors you need for it to overflow and cause disease. That's like the interplay of all of them. And then what you can also do is do protective things to increase the size of your glass. So for example, you know, you maybe are at high risk for skin cancer, but then you use sunscreen. You live in, say, Australia, where, you know, the ozone hole, so you're at higher risk because of your, or a mountainous region, but that's kind of adding more because of where you are, the environmental factor. But maybe you use sunscreen, you don't go out a lot, you know, you are always covering everything. So those are, you're increasing the size so it never overflows and causes disease. So many different kinds of genetic diseases. And some of them we are better at detecting now and making, like, creating treatments for, and those would be the causative ones, right? So because, you know, this gene is broken, this is the protein, I give it back to you, similar to like diabetes and insulin, it's not working, I give it back to you, you're fine. Or I repair that gene by giving a virus with the normal copy of the gene, that's gene therapy, so you produce the protein normally. But the ones which are more multiple interplay environment, so these are the ones where you can do something, but how much, and it's going to mitigate it. So it's all very, you know, you can't really measure it. And that's the hard thing.
Is it important then for people to get tested for all gene types, or is it just the ones that are definitely causative?
Yeah, so I think for the moment, I still think it is like a tiered testing, right? So I think the most important thing to ask people, and that's what we do when they come in for counseling, is what is it that you're looking for? Like, why, you know, what are you worried about? Why are you thinking, is it just a passing fad because everyone's doing? What are you looking for? And really getting them to understand that. So if something is really high risk in the family, or they're worried about something inherited, then we recommend doing testing specific for that. Or there's already something known in the family, then test for that. Then I would always recommend people, because we are at a point where we can do something, to test for before having children, that you and your partner, even if you decide not to do anything, whether, you know, you say, hey, I will never terminate, or I will, you know, just, it's not interesting to me because, you know, it doesn't matter. But still, it's good to have the information, because termination, a lot of people think, oh, genetic testing, people are doing it to terminate pregnancies. I'm like, no, that's not at all the reason. But if you know ahead of time, you can prepare, you can talk to other families who have a child with that same condition. You kind of can then decide to deliver in a tertiary center where all the experts are available. So you can really prepare yourself for the birth of this child who might have special needs, right? Or start therapy on day one so they don't end up having any symptoms if there is a therapy. So I really recommend people who are planning to have children to talk to someone about genetic testing for themselves and their partner to see if they're carrying something that they can pass on to their child. I also recommend people to think about genetic screening during pregnancy for the same reasons. The ahead of pregnancy you do it, you also have more options, especially because you can also go for IVF, and it just opens up more options for you. The other one for healthy people is what I call proactive screening for certain conditions where we now have guidelines. You can prevent it. So certain cancers where if you know you're a carrier, you can start screening ahead. So if breast cancer screening starts at 50 normally, if you have this BRCA change, this mutation that you know are at high risk, you can start screening much, much earlier. So right away, as soon as you find it, then you can start screening, right? And then you also know what other cancers you're at risk for, because you're also then at risk for ovarian cancer, which has very bad screening. So how will you plan your life around that? So things like that, or heart diseases. And we know, especially for women right now, the cardiovascular, it's so behind, research is so behind, and the symptoms, we don't even know for women what the actual symptoms are, because they are very different from men. But there are cardio conditions where if we know the mutation, if we know that this person is at risk, you can be monitored for it. And similarly, there are some metabolic conditions which present as just very random symptoms. And in the end, it turns out that this person cannot process copper. And the fix is very simple. You just have to get the copper out of the body. Or the same thing with a disease called hemochromatosis. You store up a lot of iron in your body. Very common in the European population. Just a lot of people are not offered testing because public systems tend to save costs. And they don't want to screen people because then they will find people that they will have to treat.
That's a really nice way of putting it. I was going to also say there's so much preventative work in this, in genetic testing and also genetic counseling. Our healthcare system, and when I say our, I kind of think, you know, the Western world, America, Australia, in Europe, we're not really putting the emphasis on that preventative care. Is genetic testing and genetic counseling covered by any type of insurances?
So the medical ones, yes. But every country, the way each country does it is slightly different. So as I mentioned, usually public systems, say the UK, I'm guessing also Australia, they put the bar very high. So they have a set of guidelines that you need to meet, because they don't want to be testing everybody because of the cost to the system and also the cost of monitoring all these people once identified. So and also historically, testing was very expensive. And that's also another misconception that a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to do genetic testing because it's expensive. It's not anymore. The costs have fallen a lot. However, the guidelines have not changed, of course. But the guidelines were there to catch really the top super high risk people who really it makes a difference for, rather than the others, because the healthcare system is trying to optimize where to spend the money, right? Yeah. And then you have the US where some things are covered, some things are not, depending on which insurance company you have, who orders it. It's sort of all over the place. They will cover something today, but then in a month, something changes in their system and they say, we don't cover it anymore. So let's not talk about the US healthcare system. So, you
know. No, I mean, I was just interested in how it would.
Everything is covered. Usually if it's diagnostic. Preventive, you pay out of pocket. Yeah. Most preventive testing, you pay out of pocket unless there is an indication in the family. Which then makes it predictive because there is an indication in the family. So yeah, but most preventive, say the couple screening, things like that, not covered. One other thing that I didn't mention is if people have had children, also your babies at birth in most of the Western countries are getting, again, a metabolic genetic screen. It's called the heel prick test. And most babies
are tested. Oh, they do it in the hospitals.
It varies widely between countries, but what they're looking for are treatable genetic conditions, which if caught at the time of birth, there is a treatment, and these kids just need a special diet or certain treatment from day one, and they do really well. So that's also a form of genetic screening, which we've implemented very successfully. So I would say those are the two population-based genetic screens where it is genetic, but it's done in a very, in a biochemical or a metabolic level first. The newborn screening is one of them. The other one I would say is the prenatal pregnancy screening with, for Down syndrome that now it's like standard of care. Most pregnant women are offered this and as they're pregnant. And I'm hoping that as we learn more, there are countries which want to introduce also population screening for cancer, at least starting with every person who has cancer. But there are also certain, say, for example, Israel, they do have founder variants and mutations for BRCA, for breast cancer, this gene.
Cancer is such a massive topic these days that it's, you know, so many people are being diagnosed with it. And if I think if you have that knowledge ahead of time, it can radically transform your life. And also for the people, you know, as you said, there's some people who are having all these different conditions and they're living, even if they're living a relatively healthy life.
That's another topic as well, where genetic testing can also inform therapy. And that's also why it's becoming important for certain conditions, because especially in cancer. So women with certain changes, or even men, like now it's also for pancreatic and prostate cancer. If you have a change, then you qualify for a certain therapy, or you would do well on that, and then you wouldn't have to do all these other therapies. So I recently heard, it's quite a sad story, and this is where I think it's still behind, because physicians are not still following, you know, out up there with the genetics knowledge, where not everyone is aware to order this test. Because a woman told me her story where she wanted, she insisted on the test. Her oncologist was like, fine, if you really want it, I'll order it, the genetic test. And then they forgot about the results. He didn't say anything to her. She underwent all of her chemo, everything, radiation, she did everything, only on one breast. And then they looked at the results afterwards, because she remembered and she asked him and he'd completely forgotten. And then when he gave her the result, she actually had, they looked at it together and she had a mutation. They would have recommended her having both of her breasts removed, because she's at risk for breast cancer and her other breasts as well. She's also at risk for ovarian cancer, skin cancer, pancreatic cancer, and she would have qualified for a very specific therapy called PARP therapy. And she wouldn't have had to have all these other chemo that she has. People don't know to ask for it. So, you know, it's only because she pushed that she even knew, right? So either the physician just is not aware because they haven't kept up with the training. Yeah, so it happens all the time. And that's why I think the awareness is important, and for people to really ask for it. In my opinion, not everybody needs a genetic test, but everybody should know what is available and what the pros and cons are, and then decide if it's right for them. But that also doesn't mean that everyone should go get one of these over the counter, like the ones you can order online, because these are usually not medical tests. And that is another important point I want to make, that if you are thinking about getting a genetic test, really talk to a genetic counselor or a professional about your concerns and why, rather than just ordering something online, because the quality is really bad. None of them are medical tests. They pretend to be, but usually they are low quality and a lot of them do not confirm. And the you cannot make medical decisions based on those. So they are very cheap because you are the product. Their goal is to basically sell your data.
Yeah, the information that they gather with this, and I think now this company's gone bankrupt and it's like, what are they going to do with all this data? So with genetic testing, what do they do with the with the data?
So usually, depending on the country, of course, but most this HIPAA in the US, which protects your healthcare data, and then in Europe, of course, GDPR, and there's also a special Article 9 for genetic data and health data. So it's a lot of security. So if you're going to a clinical lab, a medical lab that actually does it for medical purposes, they have to follow all those rules. And they also need to have certain certifications to be able to provide medical information, right? Because doctors are using this to treat patients or to guide patients to do surgeries on patients. So they have a certain level of quality they're supposed to meet. And that's why you can trust them more than any random lab that opens up shop and then starts doing it, they are not required because they claim that they are not medical. So Ancestry, it's fine. There are some traits that, you know, they tell you about, some fun stuff that they extrapolate from. It's a lot of data analysis. Mm. Like I like to say, these are all correlations because they ask you a lot of questions. Then they compare the questions with these changes they're looking at across your genome to other people who've had similar things and what they answered. And as the data gets bigger and bigger, then they make the correlation that, oh, well, 20% of the people who looked like you genetically in these regions also answered this, so then you are, you know, this mm-hmm. much percentage likely to, yeah. So when I did it told me, yeah, you're 50% likely to have curly hair. Okay, thanks. You know, so it's for fun, you know. It's and originally it told me I'm from the Indian subcontinent, but then as they got more and more mm-hmm. data from the Indian subcontinent, their data gets better as more and more people test and tell them mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. they are from, and then now they can tell me I'm from this very specific region in India. Some medical, what they claim is medical information, like they offer carrier screening mm-hmm. status for some diseases, they offer breast cancer things, or they offer like risk for Alzheimer's. So some of them are clinical data, but they still need to be confirmed in a medical lab because they are not subject to the same rigorous testing. So they should not be taken as such and medical decisions be made on that data. So I always recommend to take those with a grain of salt, the fun stuff. And then mm-hmm. if you've opted into any of the medical stuff they offer, don't panic. Always go speak to somebody and then have it clinically confirmed before, in another lab that is doing medical testing before making any medical decisions based on that.
That's a massive point as well, to also get it double checked also by a medical professional, before making any medical decisions.
And also that, going back to our original point about privacy, do keep in mind that there is a lot of fine print there. So a lot of small companies especially pop up, they go bankrupt. There's another one in the UK that happened recently where a lot of people were tested through them and now nobody knows, they just close shop and nobody knows what happened to this data or who owns it, where it is. Is it in the cloud? They sell it to someone. Nobody knows because this company just disappeared on the face of this earth. And even big companies, right? Like the one that you're referring to, 23andMe, they're not valued at anything because they're on the stock market. People are not sure what would happen to their data. That being said, I also like to say the other side of things, that yes, their business model usually is to give aggregated data to other companies for research. They have been instances where, not 23andMe, but I know some other companies submit the data to these databases and they've caught the Golden State Killer and have, you know, extrapolated the relatives from someone else. So even if you didn't do a test, say your relative did a test, but because you have so much similarities.
But if we come back to the genetic testing, so as a woman who's 38, and perhaps for anyone who's listening, as like what are the common things? So if we're thinking of perhaps if pregnancy is on the horizon or on the cards, if breast cancer is in the family, but as a woman, what else should we potentially screen for? Yeah.
So right now, with respect to hereditary like diseases, like the ones where there is management guidelines and there's guidelines for testing, mm-hmm. I would recommend what I mentioned, this proactive genetic screening, where mm-hmm. Certain genes that are recommended by the American College of Medical Genetics. So even if you do, say, a genome for some other indication, they recommend that since we know more about these diseases and can actually treat them and manage them, we should be offering these to everybody. So those are, they have some of the cancer diseases that I mentioned, the high-risk cancers, some heart diseases like cardiomyopathies. These are some of the ones where if you watch some sports where people collapse in the field or kids who those kind of diseases. And there's also some metabolic diseases on there where there is treatment available. So this panel I highly recommend. And there's, of course, the one for pre-pregnancy, really, thinking about that with your partner to see for the most common conditions. So then this would give you more options. or if you've had recurrent pregnancy losses or any instances of infertility, then there's also like investigations that can be done for this one. So there's one thing where therapy selection for like when you already have the disease, like cancer and things like that, or is a drug contraindicated, but for say psychological conditions and psychotherapy and indications in psychiatry, so medications in psychiatry, there are pharmacogenomics tests to say which ones, like these SSRIs, do you respond well, how much dosing to give. Same thing with some statins and some other drugs as well, and also blood thinners. Not everybody needs the same dose. Some people are metabolizing it faster, some people slower, and we forever have just been doing an average dosing for everybody, right? So yeah. This is how can we personalize that, and it might even, you know, save people's lives.
That's so important. I feel like the one thing when it comes to health is we're all individuals, and often, as you said, you know, with pharmaceuticals, it's usually broad blanket, but everyone has their own differences also from genetics, but also their lifestyle, their size, you know, how they metabolize and process things. So that seems like a very positive step in the right direction of where healthcare perhaps can go.
A lot of companies are working on it, and with all the investment in women's health, and I hope there's more and more that's going to come, because it's really terrible. Like, for example, one of my pet peeves is why, like, for contraceptives, right? Like, women just get given these, like, over the counter, like OCPs and birth control pills. But people do really badly on them, and we still don't have a good way to predict which woman responds well to which one and who will have very bad side effects. And the fact that they see women as, hey, let's just throw one, let's see if it sticks. If not, then we'll try another one. You had horrible symptoms for 6 months, too bad, now try this one. Okay, now try this one. I'm like, no, that's like a lot of hormones or like just putting your body through so much. So there are some companies that are like trying to see if we could do a metabolic test or a genetic test that can predict which one would be the right one for which woman. So the initial steps, baby steps, they just ask a few questions, and based on your answers, based on data from publications, they now kind of tell you which one you should go for. Mm-hmm. But the long-term idea is, can we use some sort of a marker or some sort of a test that will really, a patient can then say, okay, a doctor can then say, take this test, now we know which one, here, take this medication. Same thing for things like endometriosis or fibroids, like who is at higher risk. Yeah. So these are all more of these polygenic conditions where we could never pin down one gene for it, so there's no one gene test. But hopefully with more research in this area, somebody will come up with an actual test. So there's a lot of research going on. So there's some companies that are running their trials, trying to pin down if there is a panel we can develop or a test we can develop. But we're not there yet.
And so a lot of these tests we're not getting from online. We are going to a medical professional, getting these tests. Does everyone who gets a genetic test, should everyone see a genetic counselor then?
With the medical ones, yes and no. Ideally, it would be nice in an ideal world, but I also think there's just not enough genetic counselors. And I think depending on, as people get more and more aware, I think not for every indication it's necessary to have a genetic information session before. In the genetics world, it's called mainstreaming. So what we're doing is, as it becomes more preventive, as we want everyone to really, you know, be getting this to prevent it, it should become like any other test where that's where there's a little bit of a back and forth, but it is not like any other test, because if one person gets it, their entire family kind of has an answer, right? So that's where it's a bit different, but still, I think people shouldn't become gatekeepers. So everybody should at least be told that this exists, then they can make a decision. But the pre-test, I think it can be done by a nurse, a doctor, or for example, we at GeneLinks, so I run this company called GeneLinks, where we provide telegenetic counseling services. So we are also helping clinics and organizations set up what's called a digital pathway. So where if a patient is waiting in the waiting room, or they answer a few questions and they're at high risk, or they say they're interested, can they actually self-learn? We gather the family and medical history information, ask them these screening questions. If they are deemed to be higher risk, then maybe they're offered an appointment. If they are lower risk, then they're just shown some videos and asked, hey, if you still want, there are some tests that might still be relevant to you. this is the information, please go through it. If you understand everything and have no questions, here is a consent form, a kit will be shipped to your house. And then once you have the result, then you can come in for a counseling session. So rather than do a pre and a post, we only then can talk to the people after the test, maybe even only the positives, because, you know, it's like, who really needs it? Maybe people with the negative result really don't need to spend 60 minutes with someone. So really trying to figure out how to best use of resources, right? So, but still give access to as many people as possible.
And so in a counseling session, so because you just said someone who gets negative results, they don't need it. But what happened, like, isn't that the whole process of walking through, like, what's next? Is that the whole point of the counseling, is to support them through what to expect, what's going to happen now that you have this information?
So negative results are also important. However, if it's someone who has nothing, they did it more as a proactive screening, it might be less important, right? So it's more, so there's no indication in the family, there's nothing, but hey, I just want to know if I'm at high risk. So we tested you for these common diseases. If you're negative, maybe you don't need anything, you're just at population risk and that's enough for you. But of course, giving them the option to still talk to people because they're concerned. But if there's a family with a high risk and they came back negative, it'll be important to really still do a session with them to understand, okay, then what else can I do now? Is there another test I can do? What does this mean for me? Because sometimes we think it's a disease, we order a test, it can still come back negative. Even on a genome, when we, for undiagnosed diseases, we do genomes, and then even there, we right now only have a 40 to 50% diagnostic rate. So sometimes there's still a lot of patients walking around with undiagnosed disease, and we really don't know because we are not looking at the right places in the genome, or we don't know how to interpret it. So there's still a lot we just don't know. And for those people, it's still important to kind of then have that session as to, okay, what can you do next? How to manage this condition? If I can't tell you what it is, how can I tell you the risk for future children with that condition? So there are some more difficult aspects around that. So negative counseling is also very important, but less important so in cases of healthy people screening. A lot of people don't realize with genetics is because there's so much we don't know. And if we sequence 3 billion bases, you know, our DNA has 3 billion bases, we will find changes. Everyone has changes. We have a reference that we compare it to, but the reference is just a combination of so many things. There's a lot of changes, and that's why we all have differences. You will find things called unknown significance. So you find changes, but then they've never been seen before. Is that because, you know, you're from a rare population that just doesn't have enough data in the databases? Or is this really causative of your disease? So we can't. So we just, you know, report them as unknown significance. And the more you test, the more chances are that you'll find a lot of things that you don't know what they mean. So that's why we recommend in healthy people to not test for everything, because if you start seeing all these changes, you can't even interpret because they have no symptoms. And the second thing is what we call incidental findings. So you're looking for something, but then incidentally, so you go in testing a child for the disease that they have, but then you also see that they are, you know, carriers, or like they have a breast cancer risk or something like this. So do you report that or not? So now that's why the consenting is so important. You ask them up front, hey, like, do you want to know adult onset conditions? Do you want to know, you know, carrier status for diseases which might impact your pregnancy, you know? So and that's all in the consenting. So that's where also the genetic counseling is important, to really make you understand. You can find out things like non-paternity. So the biggest thing you see is non-paternity. So, you know, those are all things people should be aware of when they are getting a genetic test. And we see that all the time with online tests. So that's like a big caveat. People have found out that they are half siblings. They thought they were going in for a fun test, you know, gifted each other, and found out they're half siblings because one of them was conceived by IVF. And the other partner's father in his young age was a sperm donor. Now, more and more people are, you know, being conceived through IVF and egg donors and sperm donors. So those are all things, like, so you should be prepared to find out a lot of those things, you know. So there's all these, but the ones that sell you those tests don't, of course, tell you any of those things, you know. Those are all some of the cons of things that you don't think about.
I think it's excellent that we have these resources. I think it's important, especially for people who know that they can potentially be carrying genes that they can then do something about. I'm on the fence now of wanting, like, if I were to get something, wanting to know, would I want to know that this is potentially but not necessarily going to affect me in the future? I find that whole process of, you know, obviously knowing that you can do things for it, you can, you know, look after your health, change your environment, lifestyle, diet, and all that. But at the same time, maybe not.
So a lot of people feel that way, right? I worked in a lab where we were launching this Care Your screening for conditions that you and your partner must carry, and it might be helpful to know before you get pregnant, because then you can test your pregnancy or go for IVF and choose an embryo without the disease because your baby is at risk. So I actually worked for a lab that was bringing this test on, and then I said, okay, put my sample on one of the runs, and I've actually had that one done, but those tests have also grown in numbers. So at that point, we were only looking at 100 common diseases. Now the same kind of test, there are tests looking at 1,000 of those diseases. So I've only been tested for 100 common ones. And I am a carrier for familial Mediterranean fever. Yeah, it's triggered by eating, the symptoms. So the people who are carrying it, so these are diseases where you need both of your gene copies to not work. And carriers only have one working copy and one non-working copy. So when you meet a partner who's also the same as you, then you have a chance of having a child who doesn't have both working copies. So, but the carriers usually don't present. I'm a carrier for that, but also thinking about, you know, like the one that I had is a more comprehensive test where they look at all of these 100 genes, but in full. I had also 23andMe done because I wanted to see what the reports they give are like. And they actually, I think, also have some things for the same gene, for the same disease on there. But this is also where the learning comes, where these tests are not comprehensive. They don't look at the whole gene. They look at certain things in the gene, which are the most common reported disease-causing changes, but they are not looking at the entire gene to catch all the changes that could be disease-causing. So they are not a full, complete test. So that test told me you're not a carrier because they're only looking for two of the common changes, and I had some other change. So that's also where if you don't know, if you don't work in genetics, the average person will not realize that they've not been tested for, it's not a comprehensive test. Patients in clinic who'll be like, I don't have the breast cancer risk gene or the mutation because I had 23andMe done. And at that point, 23andMe was only looking for the three common Jewish founder changes. But if you were not of Jewish ancestry, it didn't even, you know, it wasn't applicable. So you could have some other change. And then it would take so much convincing to explain to them that, no, like, it's not relevant to you. There's other hundreds of other changes that cause it, but they didn't look at it.
Yeah. I mean, it's another nice reminder to go and do it with a professional,
reason for doing it. I would always recommend that you want to use it for medical purposes, change your health, to go to a genetic counselor or a genetics clinic close to you, talk to those people about your concerns, and then find the best test for you. That's my recommendation. Because then it's money well spent. Then you know that you can actually use it versus spending $250 on a test and then nope. And the worst thing is a lot of these healthcare systems are not set up to accommodate people who've had these direct-to-consumer tests, the ones that you can buy online. Mm-hmm. So when people are concerned with these results, they get turned away. Nobody will see them because also your average genetics clinic is swamped. In public systems, in the UK, there's depending on the region, in Ireland, 2-year waiting time to see a genetic or 1-year waiting time, I think, in London, in one of the biggest pediatric hospitals now within the NHS. So the wait times to get in to see someone in a genetics clinic, so they will refuse to see people who've just had a direct-to-consumer test. So you're better off from the beginning, if you have concerns, to getting an appointment and going in to see a medical professional than getting one of these tests.
If someone's interested, would it be worthwhile to see a genetic counselor for a pre-screening to then get the right tests, to then get the right help? Is that the process? Is that how it should
exactly.
go?
So that's like what I said, you know. So yeah, we offer initial consultations through our company. There's a lot of, depending on which region you're in, there's also like genetic counselors who do private practice, and they do that where you can go in, they'll do your whole family history, ask you all the right questions, understand your reasons for testing, and then tell you what the best test medically might be. And some of them can help you get that ordered and coordinated. They can find the best one with logistics wise and things like that. So so for example, we don't sell any tests. We partner with labs, and depending on the best one that we would recommend, then we, you know, figure out how you can ship a sample and pay the lab yourself, so we can guide you with that. But we also offer these kind of education sessions where you come in based on what you told me. These are all the things that make sense for you at this time. Think about it. If you want it, this is the place to go to. So we can really kind of signpost you and educate you and give you information.
I mean, it actually just sounds like the most sensible way about going about things. So where can we find you?
So GeneLinx is LINX, GeneLinx. So I'm based in Berlin in Germany, and we operate mostly in the UK and Ireland. So we have a genetic counselors, a network of them who are trained and licensed to practice in the UK and Ireland. We also offer educational sessions for people in other regions, but we might not be able to get testing ordered for them. But we could definitely do like an information session and awareness session for individuals in other regions as well. So people can always reach out to us. Our website is gene-links.com. And or they can always send an email through our contact form and we can guide them.
Yeah, wonderful. I think what you do and the service you provide is actually, I mean, it's so important. It's so important. And as you said, in an industry or in a space that's growing and growing. Thank you for coming on and actually just sharing all of this with me.
I always say before you pay for any genetic test, your family health history is the biggest screen that you can do. Really asking people, okay, grandma passed away. You told me it was stomach pain, but what was it really? Like, can we get reports on that? Like, what did Aunt X have, you know, what did uncle, what, how did they die? How many cousins do I have? You'd be surprised how many people really know nothing about their family history. And this is the best screen, or things like miscarriages. People don't talk about some of those things, or until recently, cancer was a big taboo subject. People won't, you know, it's all hush hush. So just finding out all of those things, you know, what people suffered from and went through and what happened. Children with disabilities and intellectual disabilities, they're all hidden away. They wouldn't be talked about. So things like that. So I highly suggest everyone to do that.
If you have the ability to talk to your family and get that information. Also, you know, as we come, you know, into, you know, through our 30s, 40s, 50s, sometimes we don't have that access anymore. So I think while the access is there, then it's worthwhile getting into it rather than just getting into old age and then wonder, oh, I have this and that. I wonder if that could have been screened for earlier on.
Yeah. And then we talked about older generations, but also for younger generations, right? I think it's important for you to know for your kids. But that being said, there's also, I think sometimes parents who are overzealous and they try to know everything for their kids, but that takes away the autonomy of the kids finding out for themselves. So I think there should also be some balance there, especially for adult conditions, where the kids should be allowed to make their own decision. And because I know people who actually send out their kids as samples for testing through 23andMe. And I feel like that really takes away the choice of that child to have their data in someone's database. And but people say, well, I'm the caregiver, I get to make all decisions. I'm like, yes and no.
I agree with that as well. Yeah, Alenka, thank you so much for being here today and sharing. Thank you for the work that you do, actually. That's what I really want to say.
Thank you so much for having me, Alana.
Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review, as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.